This is Rob Long with Martini Shot for The Ankler. I read an advice column once, and the person writing in asked what to do when a person you're involved with says, I love you, and you don't want to say I love you back. Or maybe you want to say it, but maybe sometimes want to say the thing that makes the other person happy or at least avoids the unpleasant conversation, but we just can't. And the advice was this. When someone says, I love you, and you can't say, I love you too, you just say this. You say, you do me great honor. Now, I'm not totally certain this is an effective response. In the first place, it just sounds weird, like you're getting an award or something. And in the second place, it's such a glaring non-response. It's essentially like shouting, I do not love you, when the point is really to wiggle out of the whole exchange. Now, I'm not an advice columnist, but I think my dialogue rewrite on this would be, if somebody says, I love you, and you can't say, I love you too, you just sigh heavily and say this. I only wish that I could feel love. Except, of course, for money. I mean, that's how it works in the entertainment industry, right? I mean, you've got your head down and you're deep in the process of writing or producing something. It's easy to forget that so is everybody else. It's easy to forget when you're working with a network and developing a show that that network, not just the network, but that very same executive is working with a lot of other people on a lot of other shows. And that the network, and not just the network, but that very same executive you're working with prefers those shows to your show. And that it's highly possible that they're even developing a few projects around a similar theme. So not only are they seeing other people, but they're seeing other people who look pretty much like you. That, in other words, they do not love you. They love money. It's a one-way thing you're involved with. You're working hard on the show and you think you're special. I mean, that's what I love you means in show business. And they're about to tell you that you do them great honor. And that's if they say anything at all. The trick to working and thriving, or at least working and not starving in show business, is remembering that the most frequent response you're going to get to anything you really care about, a script, a pitch, an idea, a meeting, is a polite and dignified silence. I mean, look, if you got a hit on your hands, you know it pretty fast. And if you don't, you know it pretty slow because nobody is going to tell you. We don't have many settings on the show business thermostat. We have popular, sought after, and we have wait and see. And, you know, we've all done our time in both of those zones. A friend of mine, for instance, he called up someone he's known for over 20 years. They had had a meeting a few weeks ago about a project my friend was working on, and the guy he's known for such a long time is in the talent management business. Although when you get right down to it, everybody in the entertainment industry is in the talent management business. And the meeting went really well, and everybody was happy to see everybody else, and everybody was excited about the project. Everyone's going to follow up. And so when my friend did, in fact, follow up a few days later with a phone call, he expected to get his call returned, which it was not, at least not immediately. Now, look, what happened here is not all that hard to understand. The follow-up phone call wasn't really all that necessary. The project in question is about 6 weeks away from requiring any action on the part of the talent management side. But often, if you're trying to get a project off the ground and into motion, you spend a lot of time sitting around making calls and not much else except waiting for those calls to be returned. So the echo chamber inside your head keeps sounding different reasons why that call is not being returned. None of which, of course, have any relationship to what's really keeping your friend of 20 years, who is in the talent management business, from returning your call, which is that he's, I don't know, probably trying to talk one of his other clients, many of whom are clinically insane, from investing in an independent, softcore pornography nightclub or iPhone app or whatever. And instead, since all you do is make calls and take calls and keep pushing the project you're working on forward, when you don't get a call back in, say, 24 hours, you get mad. Mad because, hey, this guy is your friend. And mad because you suddenly realize that in this business, the guy with the leverage is the guy who doesn't have to return the call. And the way to tell if you have leverage or not is pretty easy. The guy who's mad does not have leverage. But see, here's the challenge. Eventually, you are going to get that call returned. Eventually, the friend of 20 years is going to call you back, and the key at that point is to drain your anger and resentment away so that the call, when it comes, can be productive. Actually, that's the challenge of almost everything, from driving on the freeway to dealing with your family, but it's hard to do, especially if you've been stewing, especially if you've forgotten that you're seated in the you do me great honor section of show business, for now anyway. But what you don't want to do under any circumstances is sit down and dash off an angry email to your old friend about his rudeness, his high-handedness, his lack of loyalty, and his generally unprofessional behavior. "So what did you do when you thought he wasn't calling you back?" I asked my friend. "Well, I dashed off an angry email about his rudeness, his high-handedness, his lack of loyalty, and his unprofessional behavior," he said. And I winced, and he saw me wince, and he said, "Yeah, I know. I know." "But he did finally call you back," I asked my friend. "He actually had already sent me a text," he said, "to my old number, I think, which was okay because I felt so bad about it that I insisted he let me take him to lunch to apologize." "And how did that go?" I asked. "Well, we haven't had it yet," he said. "I'm still waiting for him to get back to me with some dates." Okay, you know, my friend is going to be waiting a long time for those dates. It is unlikely, I think you'll agree, that this was a text sent to the wrong number type deal. I mean, it never really is. There aren't any merry mix-ups when it comes to important communication. If somebody wants to talk to you, they are going to get a hold of you. Now, see, what my friend did was a classic blunder in entertainment industry exchanges. He had an emotion, and he shared it. He said, "I love you." And the response wasn't even, "You do me great honor." The response was an assistant saying, "I left word. He'll return." Now, the best and most lasting show business relationships are always in that suspended moment. If you're not currently doing a project, I mean a real one, something with a budget and a cast and a notes call from the network, then every single other relationship you have is frozen in place. I mean, I have friends I've known and worked with for years, and we only really talk or connect when one of us has something to pitch to the other. And then, you know, after years of silence, it's all smiles and friendships, and this is with somebody who has fired me in the past. I mean, we both like each other and respect each other, so why complicate it with a lot of unnecessary, you know, I love yous? A friend of mine tells this story about a pilot he did years ago. It was a pretty simple premise, single dad raising a kid, kid's smart, dad's weirded out by getting into dating world, you know, that show, whatever. And the network was pressuring him to cast a certain actor in the lead role, an actor who was really hot at that moment, who was a big star on Broadway. Now, that was back when the phrase "big star on Broadway" wasn't considered the punchline to the setup, "guess who made my latte art today?" But this big Broadway star, like a lot of stars, major and minor, had had his fill of auditioning and reading and testing the network, and he was now at what we call in the business the offer-only level, meaning if you want him, you have to make him an offer. It's a weird sleight of hand, actually, because the offer is always officially and legally an offer subject to a meeting with the series creators, and no one really defines what the meeting is, so sometimes a meeting is a meeting with chit-chat and polite, circular, dog-like sniffing between actor and writer, and sometimes it's a meeting that evolves due to a script lying on the office coffee table, helpfully open to a certain scene or monologue, into a casual reading. And sometimes, as with the case of my friend and the big Broadway star, it's an offer subject to a meeting that takes place over lunch at the hotel where the Broadway star is staying, and the lunch takes place under the close personal supervision of the head of casting for the network and the Broadway star's enfranchised representative. So you can guess how that kind of meeting usually goes. And in my friend's case, that meeting went even worse. "I liked the script," boomed the actor over his glass of white wine. "Thank you," said my friend. "Yeah, it was the best of the bad TV scripts I read this year." "Thank you," said my friend. And here he had a choice, obviously. He could ignore that little dig. It was just posturing and preening, fur-ruffling silliness, which would keep the meeting light and easy and send the message that, you know, he was the kind of executive producer who got things done, who got it, who knew that casting and dealing with actors and putting together a hit TV show entails, every now and then, for everyone, eating a big fat, you know, shit sandwich. But that is a sandwich that we all have to eat now and then, and it's not pleasant or tasty or particularly dignified, but we're in show business, not, you know, Doctors Without Borders. So we tuck into that specific kind of sandwich and we smile to the hot, sought-after actor and we get the deal done to make our pilot or film or whatever, because the only way to have a hit anything is first you have to roll film. And you cannot roll film without a cast. And if the big Broadway star is kind of a jerk, well, you know, he's still right for the role. And also, you know, what if he turns out to be not really a jerk at all? What if he's basically deep down a nice guy? And, you know, that's obviously not going to happen, but it could, I guess, in the magic realism sense. So when the Broadway star said to my friend, "Yeah, it was the best of the bad TV scripts I read this year," the correct response was to say exactly what my friend said, which was, "Thanks." And not to add, as my friend did, Yeah, well, you're the best of the bad actors the network is shoving down my throat, so we're even. Now, don't get me wrong. As a fellow writer, this guy's my hero. He's got a reputation as a writer you don't mess around with. He's a writer who would not compromise. And that was back before the phrase, a writer who would not compromise, became the punchline to the setup, guess who's running the UPS store in Visalia. Now, this is the way the world works. We all know. The secret to career and life happiness is remembering that everyone important to you, whether you like it or not, is going to come back around eventually. There is not a bridge on the earth that you won't want to cross at least twice. So, you know, put down the torch. Here's what I mean. I walked into the place where I get my hair cut, and standing there at the end of the row of barber chairs was the guy who used to cut my hair at the place where I used to go to get my hair cut, a place I stopped going to a few months ago because I like the new place better, and honestly, the old guy kept giving me terrible haircuts. But see, I'm conflict averse, and I don't want to have any bad feelings, so one day I just stopped going to the old place. I mean, I didn't want to go to a new barber at the old place because it would have been awkward and embarrassing. And as a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, there was nothing worse imaginable than something that's awkward and embarrassing. So the way I handled it was this. I just stopped going to the old place. I found the new place, which I loved, and I simply crossed the street whenever I was about to pass the old place so they didn't see me, because I didn't want to get into it, even though I knew I would get into it. I would just end up getting my hair cut again at the old place because I'm a coward that way. But anyway, a few weeks ago, I walk into the new place, and there he is, at the end of the row of chairs, my old barber. And our eyes met. And, you know, we smiled, and it was awkward. And I just fell back on these centuries of white Anglo-Saxon Protestant DNA that runs through my veins, and I did what comes naturally to me, which was to pretend that this awkward moment wasn't awkward, and to shout a cheery, "Hello there!" to the old barber from the old place, and then take my seat with my new barber at my new place and suppress and bury any weird feelings that might come up. In other words, that relationship is fine. The entertainment industry, the haircutting industry, the friendship industry, especially now when people seem to be telling each other exactly how they feel about a whole lot of incendiary and, honestly, friendship-ending things. Well, my feeling is it's okay not to return the call, not to make a statement, not to say how you truly feel. It is okay to say, you do me great honor. Or, you know, say nothing at all. Actually, nothing at all is always the smartest move. And that's it for this week. Next week, we will practice our pitch for The Ankler. This is Rob Long.